to North of Shy, the Baird & Warner North Shore podcast. I'm Eric Schwinger, and I'm here today with Anthony Marabian.
Good morning.
Ian Robinson.
Hello, everybody.
And we have a super fun and special guest with us here today, someone I've known for over 10 years since I got started in the real estate business, Jason Finn, one of our loan officers with Key Mortgage. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here with you guys today.
Thank you so much for coming out today in this lovely January weather in Chicago. So I think our episode is timely here today for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's January, so we're right at the start of the year. We haven't yet really picked up a ton of steam for spring market yet for buyers and sellers to get out there and really start to be active. In Chicago, that generally happens, what, after the Super Bowl, roughly, kind of second half of February, right? So as we sit here in January, I want to talk to you a little bit today about, what buyers can do to prepare before they call maybe a real estate agent to help them find a home, what they can do in their financial world and to get their financial house in order to prepare for what they're going to need to do to buy a house. So that's going to be the topic of today, just to kind of set the stage. Our audience on this podcast is generally real estate agents and the public, so you could speak to kind of both of those audiences here.
Sure.
But before we actually get started on that topic, I do want to ask you just to give our listeners a little bit of background on yourself. Your experience in the real estate industry, it is wide-ranging. You've done a lot of things. I know that from firsthand experience watching your career path over the last 10 or so years. So go ahead and give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, thanks so much. I always love to talk about myself, so this should be really easy. I have been, I was saying before we hit the record button, that I've been with Baird & Warner for coming up on 18 years in some way, shape, or form. And I got my real estate license as a, what we called a salesperson at the time, what we call a broker now, in 2006, because if nothing else, my timing is perfect, just before we had some challenges in the market in 07, 08, and worked as an agent and a broker for a decade and a half. Before feeling like I really had something to offer on the mortgage side of the business. I have a financial background. I went to business school. Key Mortgage is such a great organization that that I felt like I would do really well partnering with agents, being able to give them the experience that I wanted as an agent, understanding what they're looking for. And it's worked out really nicely, even down to the detail of when I see that I have clients who are making an offer on a property, I can call the listing agent and know exactly what it is they want to hear to have confidence that that money is going to be at the closing table. So Baird & Warner properly to Key Mortgage properly for the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that experience you had in the on the sales side, the residential sales side, probably serves you really well now that you're a loan officer and a loan originator, right? Because like you said, you know what list agents want to hear because you were one for so long, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when I work with new agents and they are relatively inexperienced, it's odd that the loan originator they're working with has more real estate experience than they do, right? So I can say, well, I sold $100 million worth of real estate as an agent. I did a few hundred transactions. And have you thought about considering this? Or, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I'd go ahead with it. I can be an additional resource to agents.
Yeah, that's awesome. That offers such a valuable insight and an angle that, not very many real estate or not many loan officers really can have that those tools in their toolbox, right? Awesome. So like I mentioned before, we're here to talk a little bit about sort of the early stages of preparing to buy a home, right? So so let's talk about that here. So let's start with the initial conversations you might have with a prospective home buyer. So let's say somebody calls you up and maybe they get you get a referral from a real estate agent partner of yours, or somebody calls you and says, hey, you know what? 2024 is going to be my year. I want to buy a house. Haven't really thought about what I need to do that yet. I've never bought a house before. What do I need to do? How does that initial conversation go for you? And what are some of the questions you're asking? And what are some of the things that that prospective home buyer should be thinking about?
Yeah. So it's funny because that is the most typical way would be a referral from a real estate agent. People think about the agent first in the process without knowing whether they have their financial house in order. And of course, nobody wakes up and says, you know what, honey, let's spend $700,000 next month. They say, I want a new house, right? So if we can encourage them to talk finance first, that would be even more efficient. But this way works well as well. When we have that initial conversation, I really ask them about, I'm going to say, five different categories of things. The first one is going to be, tell me about your income and your employment. is all of your money from your job? Do you have other income sources? We want to know, do they have reliable, repeatable, predictable income that's going to continue into the future? And we, that is a big part of the equation we use, or the ratio that we use when determining if they're qualified to buy a home and how much they're qualified to buy. The other half of that ratio is their debt. How much monthly debt obligation do they have? Do they have student loans, car payments, et cetera, et cetera? And so we use those two figures together. So it's a good idea for folks to maybe have their W-2 from last year in front of them, or a recent pay stub or something like that. It's a good idea for them to, if they haven't looked at their credit card statement and they have a credit card balance or they have personal loans, to look at those and figure out how much they owe every month. And that's actually more important than how much they owe in total, just for the purposes of our calculation. The third category would be credit score. You can get a conventional home loan, meaning one that Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac's guidelines say this works for us, if your credit score is 620 and above. And a lot of times the higher the better, but not necessarily always, for a variety of reasons. And if your credit score is below 620, you can still use an FHA loan, 3.5% down, the credit score of 580 or better. And if your credit score is between 500 and 579, you can actually put 10% down and still get an FHA loan.
Wow. So you can get an FHA loan at 500.
At 500.
Wow.
And the conversations that I have with prospective home buyers is not your credit score is too low, you're out of luck. But it's, we looked at it, here are some challenges that are impacting your credit, and here's what potentially you could do. Now, I'm not a credit expert. I don't give credit advice. But based on what I've seen before, here are some good ideas and things for you to do. And if they really have troubled credit, then we can connect them to or refer them to somebody who is a credit expert, who's authorized and equipped to give that direction and advice. So income, debt, credit. Next would be assets. What are you going to use for a down payment? There are some closing costs. Are you aware of closing costs? Here's about what you can expect in terms of what closing costs are. Do you have money for that? Sometimes they say, oh yeah, we've got that all figured out and they're really well prepared. And sometimes they say, we haven't thought about it. We don't have that money on hand. And then we can talk about down payment assistance programs and other ways to get money into the transaction so they're less out of pocket than maybe they would be otherwise. And then the last one is, what's your housing experience? Do you rent now? How much do you pay in rent? And from an underwriting perspective, we want to go back 2 years of history and find out what that experience has been. And those are really the five categories.
Easy.
Easy. Right?
Why doesn't everyone own a house?
I always tell people, they say, I'm intimidated by this process. I heard from friends, it's difficult.
Yeah.
And I say, you know what? It's going to be a pain in the butt. It's not the easiest thing, but it is well worth it. And if you work with the right professionals, it's going to be a lot easier than if you don't. And
Absolutely.
So a lot of folks at the end say, you told me it was going to be a pain in the butt, and maybe it was a pain in the neck, but yeah, it didn't get below the shoulders.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff.
Yeah.
What are some of the other things home buyers should focus on other than credit and saving down stuff?
Yeah, I think it's, there's a lot of times when I talk to prospective home buyers, they think my lease is up in 6 months and I don't want to be paying a mortgage and a lease at the same time. So one of the things they can think about is the timing of all of that. If you close on a mortgage on May 1st or May 2nd, you're not going to get a mortgage statement on June 1st. You're going to get it on July 1st,
right?
So they can start this process 3, 4, 5 months in advance without a lot of risk of overlapping there. So that would be one thing to anticipate. Like you said, the credit is important, of course. And so I had some folks yesterday, we were about to lock in their rate. I had done what we call a soft credit pull, which is one that's not a hard inquiry. It doesn't impact their credit score at all. A lot of people don't know that exists even. And discovered that one of the borrowers, their credit score was just 3 or 4 points below a threshold that would be really great to be above. I said, pay off this Macy's card. You owe $57 on it. Right? Their credit limit was a small number, and so the utilization was high. Their score moved up 5 points, and we saved them about $1,000 in closing costs on their rate. So the sooner we talk, the sooner I can help folks think about those types of things.
Yeah, so kind of following along that same line, what would you say is kind of the ideal timeline? Like, let's say someone's saying, well, I want to buy a house and I want to be in it by this summer, right? Because my kid's going to go to school in September and we want to be settled in our new house by the summer.
Yeah.
Should they be talking to you now in January, or is this too early? Like, what do you think?
I'm always going to say yes, but that timeline's not even that long. We have a lot of cliche and a lot of kitsch in the industry. And one of my favorite kitschy expressions is, I'd rather you talk to me a year too early than a week too late, right? So, when we get way out in front of it, we can look at your credit score. Do you have, you know, did the phone company you did business with in college decide that you owe them $11 you never paid back and it's still sitting on your credit report?
Yeah.
And we need a little time to get rid of that, clear that up. Are there strategies you haven't thought about because you do something else for a living and you're not in financial services that we can help you prepare and get things together? Are there fears you have that we can get rid of? But working back on the timeline, of course, everyone in this room knows that from contract to close, you're probably going to be about 30 to 45 days, right? So once you identify that property, figure 4 to 6, 7 weeks before you're going to close on it. We can do shorter. We certainly do longer sometimes. But it may take a little time to find that place. Maybe there's not all the inventory on the market right now that we
want to find. Who's telling you that story?
So, and I've had clients that I've worked with for 2 years before they found a place.
Oh, wow.
Because they weren't focused the whole time, not because it wasn't out there.
Sure.
And as an agent, I had folks who closed on a property about a year and a half ago, and I started working with them almost a decade ago.
Wow.
So things change in life.
Yeah.
But what happens is I'm out to brunch on Sunday morning with my family and somebody says, I need a pre-approval letter right now. We're in a multiple offer situation. And if I've never spoken to them, if I've never looked at their credit, et cetera, I have to let my family have breakfast without me and go sit in a corner with a laptop. But if I did a pre-approval with them 6 months ago, then I need to say, any changes at work? Can I update your credit report? I'll have a pre-approval letter for you in 15 minutes. And I may not even miss a course of the meal.
Preparation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As with everything in life.
Yeah. Exactly.
If you're prepared, everything goes more smoothly.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Very good. So, you know, I know that there are some guidelines and some restrictions for self-employed individuals, right? And I know that that's always a tricky thing for people who are self-employed, maybe independent contractors, in terms of buying a house. So can you clarify just some guidelines on that for anybody out there who might be listening who's self-employed?
Yeah, at a real high level, and the biggest piece of advice I would say is if you're not self-employed and you're thinking about becoming self-employed, you should wait.
Buy the house first, then become self-employed.
It makes it a lot harder to get a mortgage if it's brand new. And the reason for that, for our self-employed folks out there, is that by and large, we look back to 2 years of history, and we're going to use your tax returns. So if you have a year and 11 months of history, and it lines up that you've only filed taxes once as self-employed, that might be trickier than if you have 2 full years of tax returns. Generally speaking, we want to know that your income is relatively consistent. That's ideal if your income was better last year than it was the year before, and then we'll blend across those 2 years. If your income is declining, if last year was worse than the year before, we may only use the most recent year, so the lesser income. But you know, I would say there are a lot of lenders who are intimidated by talking to a self-employed borrower, and we're not afraid of that at all. If you've been self-employed for a couple of years, let's have a conversation. We're in good shape. If you've been self-employed for less than a couple of years, let's still have a conversation because it may still be doable. Sometimes we can go back just 12 months instead of 24. Maybe you're just a few months away from us having all the data we need, and we can get started and get prepared. And then you'll start looking at homes a month from now and close 3 months from now.
Yeah. Awesome. Very good.
What would you say are some of the common mistakes home buyers make when preparing to buy a home?
Yeah. I've seen folks use their Amex to purchase a $30,000 engagement ring 2 or 3 weeks before closing.
One thing at a time, right?
Yeah, that's... That was a surprise to me, but it was also a surprise to the future fiance. Yeah. So that was an interesting one. I would avoid opening new lines of credit, right? So if you're going to get 10% off your purchase at the department store if you open a credit card. Let's wait a few weeks on that one. Let's definitely not buy a new car. As I mentioned a minute ago, let's ideally not change jobs. Now, if you're employed by another company, not self-employed, and you have a new job opportunity, and they've given you an offer letter, and that letter is not contingent. Like if it's a nursing job, they might say it's contingent upon you getting accepted by the state of Illinois, for example. That could be a problem. But if you're a consultant for IBM and you're going to Accenture and you've got an offer letter that says you're starting in a month and here's your salary and there's no contingency, we can use that. So if you're thinking about changing jobs, definitely talk to your loan officer before you do.
Okay. What about gifts? Are gifts from family members acceptable?
Yeah, they are, and especially from family members. So it used to be fairly stringent that it had to be a family member that fell in one, you know, parent, child, step parent would work. Now it that's you certainly can still do it that way. And if there are other connections, you can get a gift from a fiance, for example, or other sort of family-like connections. It's gotten a little bit more generous in terms of what you can use. And as long as it's truly a gift, meaning, let's say we'd have the parent write a letter that said, we're giving our child $50,000 as part of their down payment. We don't expect them to pay it back. They can pay it back. That's not a problem. But what we want to make sure is that the lender is first in line to get repaid and everybody else is behind them in line.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Very good. So like I said before, our audience here for the podcast is a blend of, you know, just people who are come across us in the public, but also agents. So speaking to the agents that might be out there listening, do you have any advice in terms of what they should be doing to help their prospective home buyers prepare to make a purchase? Like what questions should they be asking? Yeah. What, you know, should they be advising their clients to do early on in the process?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And besides calling Jason Finn, obviously, that goes without
that's
saying.
Always number one, obviously. I think it's a tough question because people are at so many different parts in terms of their preparedness, how much they've done. Sometimes I talk to folks and they've Googled everything and maybe not all the answers were accurate or perfect, but they have a really, really good idea. And others have said, I want to buy a home and that's all I know. So our agents know that they want their clients to have a pre-approval letter before they get in the car and drive them around and show them homes they may not qualify for. So that's an important part of it. One of the questions I always ask home buyers is, do you understand or do you have an expectation about closing costs? Have you had that conversation? So if agents have a conversation with their buyers about here's how the process works, of course, and then when you go to the closing table, you're going to bring your down payment. There's also some cost to close. And we know we're educating our buyers now about how commission works from an agent standpoint, right? That's a hot topic right now. And that buyer's agents are not free, but understanding how that model works and how they get compensated. So a buyer may need to bring money for their agent in some cases, and they will certainly need to bring money for their closing costs or have some kind of down payment assistance. So I think that's a really hot one is, are they prepared to have that conversation about what the transaction cost of a real estate transaction is, buying or selling?
So good, right? This guy even knows about the commission situation we're in right now as an industry.
I'm an academic and a geek, so I get into all this stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more question for you here. Well, maybe a couple more, but first and foremost, so we're recording this in January. This episode's probably not going to air until February, maybe early February. But that's still early enough in the year for you to break out your crystal ball and tell us what you see for 2024, particularly as it pertains to interest rates, right? I mean, that's been all the buzz in the industry for the last year or so, right? With the spike in interest rates, and they came down a little bit, and now they're kind of bumping back up a little bit maybe. So what do you see? And we won't obviously hold your feet to the fire if you're not entirely accurate, but what do you see happening with interest rates in 2024? Do you think, you know, we're in for a rough ride, or do you think we're going to kind of slowly see this decline like a lot of people are expecting?
Yeah, thanks for the easy question.
Yeah, no problem.
I'd like to preface this with, I've never been wrong. I have an arrangement where I get all the answers in advance, but I'm not allowed to actually share them. It is such a complicated question, right? And if I would first caution anybody who's listening to understand that if somebody tells you they know exactly where the market's going and exactly what interest rates are going to do, the chances are pretty strong they don't, and it's a false confidence. And the reason is that interest rates and mortgage rates are based on what we already know about the future. And so all the information we have is already baked in. It's like a stock, right? We can look at profit and loss, and we can look at all these other things. But if you knew that that a technology company was about to sell to a big organization, then their stock price would be something different. Similarly, mortgage prices are driven by mortgage-backed securities. A mortgage-backed security is an investment. And when investors think about buying those, they evaluate, is that better for me to put my money in than bonds or equities or something else, right? So all of that's baked in. Now, that said, 2 years ago, the Fed said, inflation is way too high. We've got a problem. We've got to start raising interest rates. That interest rate that they're talking about is the federal overnight rate. It's how much it costs for banks to borrow money from other banks, right? So one night in 30 years is a pretty different time frame. for mortgage rates, but it impacts everything else. And their goal was, let's get inflation down from the 9% or whatever it's at, down to a 2% rate. Well, we've gotten really, really close. So our annual inflation rate right now is somewhere around 3%, depending on how you slice it. But if we extrapolate what we've seen the last 3 or 4 or 5 months out to a year, we're closer to 2%. So the Fed has accomplished much of their goal, whether because they were great at what they did, or maybe they got lucky in a couple of ways. There's lots of opinions on that. So what needs to happen next? They're probably not going to raise that rate anymore. In fact, there's a lot of discussion that they're going to lower that rate. We don't know for sure they're going to do it in March, but they're probably going to do it in March. We don't know if they're going to do it in April, but they may do it 4 times, 6 times, even 7 times this year for the really ambitious amongst us. So I would expect, short answer to the long answer to the question, I would expect for rates to come down this year.
Yeah.
Because I think we've licked a lot of that stuff. The other data we're looking at is how good is employment? How good are retail sales? What does manufacturing look like? And the Fed says, okay, the economy is way stronger than we thought, even though we've gotten rid of some inflation. So maybe we're not going to drop the interest rate as much as we thought we were going to. And then, of course, there's all kinds of external factors. What's going on in the Middle East? What's going on in Asia? What's going on with the election in this country here?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So all of those things will have an impact.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you don't know. No, I think we nailed you on. They're going to come down a little bit, right, over the course of the year.
So. No, my money is on them coming down.
Your money
down
is
on.
All right, good.
You know, I'm not a gambler.
If you were a betting man,
yeah,
you would say
that's right.
All right, cool. Well, this has been a really great conversation. Thank you. It's been super informative for me because I don't, you know, I spent my time in real estate and I still am on the residential sales side of things, so I don't know all the inner workings of the mortgage industry. So I appreciate you coming out today and sharing some of your insight with us. We do have just maybe one or two super quick surprise questions for you that
okay.
we ask every one of our guests.
Yeah.
And these are always tricky to answer on the spot. But let's say you could pick one actor to play you in a movie.
Mm.
Who would that actor be?
That's harder than the interest rate question.
I know. It's tough.
I'm going to say a couple different names come to mind, but I'm going to say Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, all
right. And the reason is I've always wanted to be cooler and more relaxed and chill than I am in real life. And that all right kind of speaks to me about that. Plus, he's taller than I am and he's better looking than I am. And we can always aspire
to be that. Don't sell yourself short here. Our listeners can't see you, but
yeah. I'm about 7 feet tall in real life.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'm short.
Long, blonde, flowing hair.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Exactly.
Love it. One more quick question for you and then we'll get you out of here. If you could have one superpower, what would you pick to be your superpower, Jason?
I thought about this earlier this week, actually, because I had a similar question from someone. And I think the answer would be clarity. And clarity maybe in communication as much as anything else. What we do is educate and inform people how to make good decisions for themselves. And sometimes I give way too much detail. Sometimes I get into the weeds and it's not right for my audience, but I'm always afraid about leaving something out.
Sure.
That's important. And really, if you had that superpower of clarity and communication, you would have a much greater calling in the sense of, you know, helping world peace and things like that. So you can use that skill and with 2 people at a time or with 1 million people at a time. And that would be the superpower.
I love it.
Yeah.
You're making me feel a little simplistic because I just want to be invisible.
That's a great answer, too.
That would be very fun. No, I love it. That's great stuff, Jason. Thanks again so much for coming out. So let's say someone out there is listening and they're either a home buyer thinking they might want to buy a home this year,
yeah,
or they're an agent with some home buyers who are looking to, you know, for an introduction to a great mortgage lender.
Yeah.
How would someone get a hold of you?
Ooh, I'm going to take a show like you on the road with me for sure. you can find me on social media. And you can find me at my website at jasonlenz.com. That's J-A-S-O-N. Whoa, I'll try that again. You can find me on my website or on social media at jasonlenz, J-A-S-O-N, and then lens like lending, L-E-N-D-S, not like the eyeglasses. And so jasonlenz.com is my website. Jason Lenz is my handle on Instagram and Facebook and so on. And you can reach me by telephone at 773-797-9499. And like I said, I love to talk. I love to communicate, educate, inform. And so I welcome those inbound communications.
Fantastic. Any of our other hosts here have anything to add?
Nope. Thanks for being with us, Jason.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason,
for having me.
And to everyone out there in podcast land, we'll see you next time on North of Shy.